We have Jeremy Levine today, who is the Director of Business Development at WalkMe. During my SDR days, I used to look up to WalkMe as they were a competitor back then, but more importantly, because I liked the company's leadership and I did go to a couple of parties. Jeremy wasn't born into sales, especially SaaS sales. He started as a BDR at 42 and grew up the ranks. He leads a great BDR team for the APAC team today and understands the challenge of building a great one. When SDR tenure has shrunk to 15 months on average, today he will talk about how to retain your team members. Let's welcome Jeremy Levine. Sales engagement automation systems are critical for any sales organization to achieve that excellence. But at the same time, it is a complex, tedious, and expensive process for any sales organization to implement it. Sometimes it can end in a failure too, and you have to start all over again. To fix this problem, Playbook.ai, our current sponsor, has introduced a program for SaaS and enterprise technology startups called the Sales Excellence Program. It is the most effective, fastest, and risk-free way to deploy a sales engagement automation system in your organization to drive that growth and drive revenue excellence. None of the top sales engagement platforms give you a free trial, at least most of them. But in the Sales Excellence Program, Playbook.ai customer success team not only gives you the free and unlimited access to all the features for 6 weeks, they also do the heavy lifting of implementing a sales engagement system and provide you with advice on what best practices you should follow when creating your sales playbook. To join the Sales Excellence Program, all you have to do is visit playbook.ai/SEP, Sales Engagement Platform, SEP, and type R, followed by my last name, WADHWA, when the request invitation form asks you for the name of the accelerator. Hi, Jeremy. Thank you so much for honoring us on the show. Welcome to the Sales Spin. This is the first episode we are recording, by the way, for this year. So welcome here.
Thank you, Rahul. It's a pleasure to be here. Good to see you again.
Likewise. So Jeremy, I think we chose a very interesting topic this year. I mean, all the topics are interesting, but this is, again, something which I have been observing for a long time in, I think, most parts of India. At the same time, I'm sure that this is a common problem across the world. Most of the companies would go on social media and talk about how great their companies are, how robust their culture is. However, at the same time, we see, especially in our world, the outbound world, retaining SDRs is a bigger challenge, a very big challenge. It could be due to multiple factors. And what I think about, how to retain people could be totally different than yours, because you and I probably play a different game, you enterprise, and I've been playing sort of a mid-market game so far. So I'd like to hear your views in terms of how do you go about retaining people? Because clearly, I think you have a great record of people staying with you for a year, 2 years, and not even want to get promoted to the next role. So happy to hear your thoughts.
Well, okay. I love this topic. And I think, Rahul, there's two different sides to it that you have to examine. First and foremost, how you recruit and how you structure your team, mm-hmm. right? Starting with, let's start with structure, because recruitment's going to feed into that, right? I have a team, or I have two pods right now in EMEA, and I had a third one in APAC, which I'm giving up. I just can't do the hours anymore. Sydney to California, it's a very long day. One of the first things we do is really try to generate really good team culture from the very beginning, right? And that's kind of at the core of the structure, right? Is that identity of what the team is. Okay. So the secret to my success there is that I have a mascot for my team. We are the Spartans. And with that comes an entire ideology of, like a warrior, ideology that you kind of drives down into it. So one of the things I introduced last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, I think during the pandemic, this last 2 years feels like a really long year. I created what was called the Spartan core values, right? And kind of what the team is about and what our philosophies were. So starting with, four words, right? We need to be agile and adaptable. We need to be efficient and proactive. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we talk about being the tip of the spear, right? And that warrior culture covers both men and women because it's Spartans, right? Mm-hmm. And that was common in the Spartan philosophy. And that we're the ones, the hunters out there, you know, fighting right. in the fields every day. And so if you start there and kind of develop that, and then everybody that's coming in is kind of feel part of that culture, part of that society. And so it starts to build a very strong team culture from day one. Welcome to the Spartans, right? And it's one of my favorite sessions is to welcome that new hire on the very first day. And I bring up that core value sheet and walk them through what their, you know, onboarding program is and what it means to be a Spartan. And that's how we introduce you, right? And so immediately from that first conversation, we're setting team culture, right? You're part of something bigger. You're part of something grander. You're part of something, you know, a team, right? And it also mm-hmm. generates, you know, when you're part of that team, first and foremost, you're going to stay part of that team a lot longer because when you don't have that team, you feel it, right? So that's a really good retention tool from the very beginning is that you make them feel incredibly included as part of the team. We celebrate that we have a new member, right? And then, you know, throughout the onboarding, they will participate or be trained by or sit with every single person in the team at least once, right? So the more senior members will have a very strong hand in their onboarding and training, mm-hmm. but at least throughout that session, throughout that onboarding period, they do have to meet with each and every member. It's part of my requirement. Because they can learn something from the newest members and the oldest members, but also to generate that team.
Got it.
Okay. But does that make sense so far? And just kind of as a starting point?
No, I think that this is good because I've heard similar theories, you know, in the past. However, I've never seen or never heard probably something like this in action. I mean, it's all good in theory. However, for example, and again, I don't mean to say that what you're saying is not enough. What I'm saying is I'm trying to imagine how this will all play in, you know, when a new person joins your team. At the same time, I'm also thinking of from a perspective that would this be different? Let's say if the average age of the SDR, let's say in your team were lot more than, you know, something in mind, because for example, I have had experience hiring people who were 21, 22. However, let's say there could be a possibility that when you're hiring, you're looking for, of course, more experienced people who could speak the enterprise language, who could be with 30, 32, for example. There could be a age difference and the mindset difference as well.
Well, okay. So that also makes a huge impact too, right? So my average age, now let's talk about like recruitment and hiring. Yeah. So my average age is somewhere around 35.
Right.
Okay, now that makes all the difference in the world because what I'm doing is a lot of the people that I'm hiring do not have experience in the field.
Got it.
Okay, so a lot of them are trying to rebuild their careers or take their careers in a different direction. And I use myself as the model because I am new in SaaS technically. I've only been in the industry for the last 5 years as of mm-hmm. this May. Okay, and my entire time has been with WalkMe. And I started it as an outbound SDR at 42 years old.
Wow.
Right. And that's very rare. And there was some resistance to hiring me because of my age, I'm sure. Right. Not too sure about hiring somebody of my age, you know, to do an SDR work, but you know, like I knew as a father, as an immigrant into Israel that, and as an English speaker, that if I was to provide something of a decent life for my family, mm-hmm. I needed to move into high tech. There was no other options in this country.
Right.
Right. So I fought to get in. And once I was there, I'm going to hold on to it with everything that I have. Right. And all of the experience that I have in a variety of different industries being, you know, being that I studied art in school. So mm-hmm. when you have a degree in art, you got to find a million different things to do to make money because, you know, making art does not necessarily make you money, but mm-hmm. What I did, you know, like all that experience, you know, just kind of fed into, you know, just making me better at my role, right? And be able to think outside the box and, you know, also feed off of my own personal network that I developed over the last 20 years of my life, right? So I had some quick wins when I first entered the organization just by reaching out to old friends from school, right? That were in high tech, that were in, you know, technical, you know, jobs. I think I had a friend that was a VP at Neiman Marcus that we brought in Neiman Marcus as an account. I had a friend that was a you know product lead at a SaaS company. They were looking for you know a tool to help onboard and simplify training. So I was able to bring him in, and we went to like preschool together.
Wow!
So that was kind of cool being able to utilize that. But using myself as the frame and understanding that like look, my drive was just, I need to keep this job, do the most out of it. It wasn't about getting to the next role. It was about doing the best I could in the role that I'm in now. Right. And I found that that actually is a pretty good format for, you know, framing the way your organization, also a good way to retain people. Okay. If you're hiring people for the job now, okay. And very early on in the very first interview, I make it very clear, look, you know, career development and job progression is incredibly important to me. That's my biggest win, my biggest KPI for myself is getting my people into career tracks and into, you know, into their next role. But it's not my priority, right? My priority is making them the best BDRs I can possibly make. Okay. Right. And from there, you know, throughout that time that they're on my team, we start to evolve and talk and, you know, put a direction. That way you don't have to come in from day one and decide what you want to do with the rest of your career. Right. Let's be good at this job. And then let's move it forward. And I think, you know, some of the things I've noticed, and this has to do more with, you know, if you read some of the American books about how to structure outbound teams, how to structure sales development teams, what you see is that, you know, they create what I call a talent generating machine. Right. Where they hire them young and they put them in, you know, it's like a, I don't know, into a cage match. Right. The top performers are going to get promoted into junior AEs. And that's a good way to turn out monster AEs. There's no doubt about it. But when you don't have an organization that can support that kind of movement, you're going to get churn, a lot of it.
I'm glad you're talking about it now.
Yeah.
Because that's, right? That's the biggest challenge I face on a daily basis when I'm going to hire people, let's say, just with 2 years experience. And the first response is, hey, I'm looking to move up. And my next question is, hey, do you have any opportunities right now? And the most 90% of the time answer is no. However, that's what they're looking for. So if they're looking out to move, they will be moving out to AE. And the truth is no other company will hire you as an AE, at least that company outside, if your company within cannot promote you. So that becomes a challenge. And that's where I believe, you know, SDR feels at the crossroad where he or she does not know, you know, they don't know what to do.
Yeah. And that's another reason I don't want to hire a BDR with 2 years of experience. Right. It's too much of a risk that they're not going to sit in seat for more than a year because they've already been, you know, I think that's another thing that you have to talk about is that the BDR role, you know, I love the role. I love doing the job. Mm-hmm. But the things that I loved about it was the research and the phone because the rest of the role is incredibly monotonous. Right. And that's one of the reasons I push such a strong cold calling culture for my teams is that, you know, that's what breaks the monotony is getting on the phone. Right. And that's, you know, and after a year doing the role, you know, it gets to a point where just like day in, day out, doing the research, the prospecting, developing the leads, making the phone calls, doing the email customization, you know, it's that constant flow. So we want to break that up as much as you possibly can. That's another, you know, way to retain people longer is to make sure that they're not stuck in a monotonous rut of doing the same thing day in, day out. And if you take somebody that's been doing that for 2 years, that, you know, obviously wants to move up and, you know, you sell them, you know, no problem. You come into me within a year, you do really well, you'll be an AE, right? I can't make that promise. I'm not going to make that promise, right? I don't have the junior roles in my region to even to, you know, offer that kind of path at this point in time.
Fair point, yeah, Jeremy. I'm so sorry. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Sorry.
Now, I'm thinking out loud. Okay. While your point about the young people is absolutely on point, I'm just thinking out loud. Isn't that same true for the senior people, like the way you hire? So these people are, let's say, somebody who's trying to rebuild a career into SaaS, for example, 35 years old, and they understand, you know, they have a family to provide, obviously, and they understand the next step to grow is, of course, by stepping into another position or something. And like you said, your options are anyways limited because of the region, right? So, don't senior people have the same thought process? Like they want to grow in, you know, into a role which is not as mundane as the BDR?
So yes, that is for sure. And we have ways to retain them longer. Look, I guess the question is how much life do you want out of a BDR? Right? If the average lifespan globally is 15 months, okay, when I interview somebody, when I'm, you know, offering the role, I'm like, I'm looking for a year and a half to 2 year commitment. That's it. Okay. I'd like to get 2 years out of you, more if I can, but, you know, if I can get 2 years out of a worker, that's incredible. Okay. And on average, I'm about 2 years on most of the people that have been on my team. And 2 years is, you know, a year and a half in is when you start to get, you know, frustrated. Okay. And that's where we can start to explore other options. And you've got like a 6-month window in order to move them, you know, forward. And we just did that with a wonderful woman named Lucy, who's a school teacher from the UK, you know, who spent almost 2 years on my team. And, you know, towards the end, she was getting frustrated. But one of the things that we have also is promotion within the team, right? So we have senior BDRs. And the senior BDR role is, you know, there's a lot of people, I guess it just depends on, you know, where you are and how you run it. But to me, they're a part of my leadership team.
Got it.
Right. I need them. I need them there to help lead the team. And I treat them as such. So, you know, when we have a weekly, you know, leadership meeting, it's my seniors and my other manager, and or the managers, the SDR and the BDR managers, and they come in and we sit together and we plan out, you know, whatever agenda that we have for the day, whether it's, you know, a special project or increasing sequences, working with people. They're included in a lot of different aspects of the BDR lifecycle. So everything from hiring, you know, to onboarding, to, you know, training and retraining. And if we're not available, they're the next people in line for, you know, that you go to for help.
Got it.
So that also, you know, it's giving them more to do. It's giving them, you know, it's challenging them in different ways too. That also helps a lot.
Right. That is an interesting point when you said, you know, senior, because a lot of times when I've seen a senior BDR title, that's just a title, you know, that does not hold more responsibilities. And that just is something, you know, which is on paper, but like you're saying, you're kind of trying to involve them into leadership. One follow-up question I have is, it only makes sense for you to include them in leadership when you have a little bigger team, right? So if you have, let's say, only 3 BDR, does not make sense for one person to be pulled into the leadership team just for the heck of it, right?
Well, not necessarily. Look, you could, I mean, it depends on you, right? Right. Think of it in the terms of, as a leader, how much help do you need in running the team? Okay. And if you elevate somebody, you know, as your right hand, that there could be a lot of value in that. Right. For both them and you. And it can alleviate some of the pressure that you have. You know, do you want to work a 12-hour day or a 10-hour day? That's a big question at the end. Right. Because we work crazy hours. It's just the demands of the role. Yeah. But if I can alleviate my, you know, if I can get an hour or two off me and go spend that time with my family, and hand off a little bit of work to, you know, one of my seniors, then great. You know, that's a great help to me. Also for mental health, right? Kind of keeps us a little bit more level, reminds us why we work so hard. So it just depends on, you know, it depends on you really and what you'd like to get. And also, is there somebody worthy to be your right hand? Right. I also, you know, one of the things I'd love to develop is protégés. Right. There's a couple of people that I work with very closely that I would consider my protégés that are part of my leadership team, right? That have been by my side for a long time. And, you know, and I'm constantly, you know, nurturing and working with them and enabling them to, you know, and giving them, you know, a lot of responsibility to do things on their own. So I'll give you an example. Sarah Stevens, she runs my French desk. She was my first hire when I became a manager. Right. And I, you know, even the story of hiring her was just so amazing because she hunted me down. She's in her mid-30s. She's very well educated. She came from retail and fashion, and then she did like a extra degree in pastry, French, of course, right? And then she moved to Israel. And when you move and immigrate to Israel, you've got to reinvent yourself a whole bunch of times. And so when the French role opened up, I was at a job fair. And she found out that the hiring manager for that role was there, and she waited for me and hunted me down and then sat with me. And throughout her process of interview, one of the things I do is a call scenario test. Mm-hmm. It's one of my most successful things when it comes to actually like weeding through like prospects as to who's quality and who's not. And she came in and I remember the phone wasn't working. So I had to go to the room that she was sitting in. This is before COVID, right? So we were actually on site, and she was sitting in a private room, and I walked over just to check the phone, and she had all these sheets of paper out on her desk, notes, all handwritten, like 5 or 6 of them, sheets of paper, fully, you know, completely covered. And I was just like, wow. I saw the notes and I was like, do you have the prospects? Because you have a French list and I don't know who they are. And she handed it to me, and I was like, oh, okay. So these are the names. This is like, you know, I don't know, sales operations, orange, you know, different French companies. And I was like, oh, what are these names here? She goes, oh, those are the people, the prospects. I found them on LinkedIn. And that was it. That's all I needed. I was done. And then once she did the call scenario with the French speaking AE, she turned to me, she goes, she has a master's degree, doesn't she? Her French is so high level, like it's beautiful. And so that was it. That was done. And she's been by my side for like 2.5 years, definitely one of my proteges. And I think, you know, one of the things that we started working on is she became my enablement person, right? Just by default, I needed help. Like we had a huge hiring spree last fall. We had 3, 2, and 2, like month after month, like 8 new people, and there's an 8th one that joined the following month. So like 4 months in a row, we had to do onboarding programs. Mm-hmm. After the first one, I couldn't do it all. So I enabled Sarah. She took it over and took the system that I developed and took it to a whole nother level. And we ran like, you know, really successful onboarding programs month over month with new, you know, people, and they were hitting their targets in their first month. And that was so exciting to see her grow. And she just loved it. Absolutely loved it. I hooked her up with some enablement friends. They're doing podcasts now, their videos.
Wow.
and so, you know, and she's not, you know, I know she's getting at the end of her time, right? After 2.5 years, like, you know, she's been with me, 2 years, 2.5 years now. And that's a very long time for a BDR. But I think one of the things that keeps her involved is that she's got some serious responsibility on my team. And she's definitely like, if I'm not around and Daniel's not around, she's the person you go to for help. And she's just doing such amazing things with the new BDRs. It's just really phenomenal. Also, we've got generational knowledge with her because she worked with some of the original BDRs from the original team, you know, going back multiple generations of the Spartan team.
Well, that is interesting. So I think I'm just trying to, you know, summarize in my head as to what we have talked so far. You talked about the mascot, how to create the culture, you know, the setting the expectation, the whole interview process, the recruitment, and not hiring young people at the same time. Then you talked about giving them more responsibilities just to make sure, you know, they remain involved at the same time. Another thing which I can think of when you give them more responsibilities, sometimes, you know, they realize, okay, you know what? I probably don't want to do the BDR. And some people might be like, you know, hey, I want to move into the operation or RevOps or, you know, enablement or whatever, right? So that might open more possibilities, of course, if your organization kind of allows that. I would want you to maybe talk more about the culture, like how do you actually create culture? So let's assume that somebody who's listening to this podcast is a founder or let's say an early SDR manager, first BDR, just like you were like 5 years ago. And if they were to start the culture all over again, how would they go about, you know, the recruitment? Because sometimes, for example, in cases like me, when, for example, when I'm the first SDR manager, I'm about to set up my team, I'm the sole owner of the recruitment as well. So there's nobody from the recruitment. I'm the one who's going to hunt down that process, you know, those people as well. So maybe if you could walk us down through the process, that'll be great.
So, okay, let's talk about generating culture from the very beginning. I think, you know, one of the things I would say is key is transparency, mm-hmm. right? I think that should be like the core root of culture. It should be like, could come from transparency. You need to be upfront, honest, you know, and transparent with your people, right? And if you start to feed, you know, if they feel that right from the beginning, that's started already like a happy feeling culture. Right. If you're hiding things or not being very transparent and you're like, oh, no, don't worry about that. We'll take care of it. You know, I think that, you know, in the beginning, you know, there it kind of puts up a wall. Right. And as long as you don't have that wall, you know, it's a really good way to start because then people feel included. Right. So I think one of the things I used to do is just, you know, when I was just me and I had, you know, a couple of maybe a senior or something like that, but I didn't have any managers yet or anything like that. And, you know, in order to talk through my ideas, I would call, you know, more of the senior people up and just talk like, oh my God, I got to get some things off. And, you know, and Naomi Brief was my ear for a very long time. She's no longer with the organization, but she, you know, I just call her in the, you know, 7 o'clock at night. Hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And yeah, of course. And, you know, and just like kind of spout out all my ideas just to kind of get my thoughts organized. And she was brilliant with that, just to, you know, listen and kind of ask me questions in the background. But that core transparency, and it's not just her, I would be transparent with the whole team, sometimes too transparent. And I'd say that sometimes. I'm like, okay, I think I'm probably telling you guys too much, but you know, but that's okay. You know, it's the culture that I want to generate, right? Is that kind of honest, upfront culture. The second aspect of it is team culture, right? We support each other as a team. Okay. Yeah, we can have competitions where we're going against each other, but we want to celebrate success. And I think the culmination of that was just so amazing. It was in this past fall, you know, we had just this hot rod of a woman. Her name is Ariella. She's 37 years old. She has 7 kids and one of my top performers. You'll see her all over LinkedIn. She's got a very, very strong presence online. And she's like also the queen of social selling. So she's very good at what she does. And she came from nonprofits for like 15 years. Again, it's that, you know, giving people a new opportunity to build a career. And it just suits her. And she loves the role. And it actually gives her enough flexibility that she can take care of her 7 children. But she was killing it. And then Mansi, my Australian in Sydney, she, you know, just had an amazing month. It just kind of took off like a rocket. And it was the two of them were neck and neck, mm-hmm. you know, and everybody's like, Ariella has been the rock star lately, but Mansi beat her. Right. And Ariella was just, it was so honorable. She's like, oh, you know, it's great, Mansi. Congratulations. If I couldn't be beaten by anybody, it would have been beaten by you. It's just such an honor, that kind of attitude. And Daniel and I are just like, oh, that is awesome. That's the kind of culture we've generated, right? Is that, you know, they celebrated each other's success even when they were competing with each other, right?
That is amazing.
And that's really, really important, right? That you know, you celebrate as a team each individual's success, right? Yeah. And we do that every week, every meeting, you know, like who was top performer last week? Let's celebrate that. Also, who's right, you know, on their heels. Okay. Let's have some contests. Let's, you know, somebody's going to win. We're going to celebrate that, but we're also going to, you know, push everybody else to drive. Right. And in the end we win as a team, right. That's also good cultural, you know, I guess, good for driving culture. Cause that's, I mean, nothing beats that when you celebrate, you know, as a team, one person's success.
Right. That was, you know, the story was beautiful. I think I'm connected to Mansi already on LinkedIn and I know what you're saying. So another question I have from when you talked about the recruitment and you talked about how you hired people who are 35, 37. See, I understand one of the challenge for a lot of listeners who are probably in India would be cultural. For example, I'm pretty sure I'm 35. For example, I would be totally okay, you know, getting into the BDR role even right now. If somebody were to ask me, hey, all you have to do is do BDR role for the whole life, I'm okay with that. But I'm pretty sure 95% of the people would not be, right? Do you think that sort of cultural shift can happen, let's say, in 5 years? Or do you think, what can we do, let's say, to promote that cultural shift?
But you're not going to find very, like a lifetime BDR is not going to be a common thing. As I've discovered, like not a lot of people can do this role for a very long time, right? Or they're going to have to jump companies in order to do it because they'll need a change every once in a while, right? It'd be 2 years at one company and then go to another company. Right. And basically, I think actually if you were to do it right, you could become something of a ringer, right? Of, you know, a professional BDR that can go move from organization to organization, collecting, you know, options and, you know, performing for 2 years. And once, you know, your time is up, go to another one. That could actually be a very cool job for somebody that likes the role. I think it's more about, you know, look, we want to talk about job progression. We want to talk about career path. Okay. And maybe this is the role that suits you. Like Ariella just loves this role. Right. And she went through interviews for a senior role over this past week. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions they said, where do you want to go next? You know, the Americans were, it was a panel interview. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, she said, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm not looking to go anywhere anytime soon. Right. I like what I'm doing. It also frees up, you know, it suits her. It also gives her that flexibility to take care of her large family.
I'm glad you brought this up because I think I'm kind of the same thought because a lot of people I have talked to, let's say, who do not want to move from the BDR role to, let's say, the traditional AE path or even the SDR manager or even the team lead path, right? Because they understand with the career path, with the career growth comes more responsibilities and sometimes they're not ready for it. Sometimes they just want that flexibility, whether they put in those 8, 9, 10 hours, you know, meet their numbers, meet their quota, go home, you know, and make money.
Right. And if they do well and you have a good, you know, compensation package where they, you know, people that accelerate can get even more money, people, you know, they'll work their butts off to get those accelerators, right? Yeah. And that's a major part of it too. But the other thing is, and keep this in mind, because you keep mentioning, you know, the path for an AE or a BDR is to an AE or to a leadership role. The reality is the path for a BDR or any but prospector for that matter could be any direction.
True.
Like the BDR skill set, the prospecting skill set is incredibly valuable anywhere. Right. It's not something. And, you know, if you're in the CSM org, if you go into like customer success org, think about churn where you've lost personas. Right. Yeah. And if you had a prospector in that role, how easy it would be for them to find a replacement.
Yeah. True. Right?
I think about, you know, HR, even recruitment is a prospecting role. Right. We have like a renewal manager is a new pathway. We put somebody in professional services. That wasn't the greatest fit, but you know, there's a lot of different ways that you can move with an organization. It doesn't necessarily have to be the most traditional AE or leadership roles. Right. And the skill set is even engaging cold, right, is an incredible skill set to have. Not a lot of people realize, you know, like we were like, to us, it's like second nature. I'll call somebody up on the phone and never spoken to them before and try to get them to engage. No problem. But so many people are afraid of doing that, right? We forget at times because this is what we do, that there's a lot of people in this world, a good majority of them, that would not just call people out of the blue and try to sell them something.
No, I totally agree with that because I can agree, you know, all these skills are kind of transferable as we or you and I probably must have seen in terms of when we used our own prospecting skills to hunt these, you know, people who are working with us today, right?
Yeah, for
so
sure.
All these skills are transferable and I totally agree with you. And I think when I am starting with any company, you know, most of the companies are like with nascent stage, I'm doing the entire prospecting myself, the hunting, the everything. So yeah, I can totally relate to what you're saying. One of the other thing I want to talk about is, I know we're talking about how do you retain your team, how do you retain your people, but at the same time, would you agree that it's okay to not retain people at time because you just don't have options?
Agree. Do you think 100%? 100%. Look, you know, I just lost a BDR. It's my first one this year. Okay, who left the organization as a whole, and the reason why is that, you know, the role wasn't the best fit for him. He was very young. For my team anyway, it's 25 years old. And an opportunity presented itself to do what he really wanted to do, which was to work in sports and tech. Mm-hmm. And so he couldn't say no to that opportunity. And absolutely, we were like, you know, congratulations, right? Yeah. And you know, let's celebrate that success. And the other thing is, you know, and I also had a conversation with, you know, a BDR that I had to let go. And I actually put a post out, you know, to congratulate the women of the organization and all the previous ones with International Women's Day. It was last year. Mm-hmm. And I included her in that congratulations. And, you know, and she asked me why, you know, when you didn't like me on your team. I'm like, but it wasn't a good fit for you. But at the same time, you left my organization. You've done more. Right. And for that, we celebrate. Right. To Mitch, who left to go be an AE, we couldn't provide him with that career track after 2 years of being a BDR. It just wasn't possible. We tried like hell to provide him, or at least I did, you know, and had him interviewing with everybody just to see if we could get anywhere, you know, even in the US with the SMB team to see if we could get him just into a role and retain him as an employee because he was great. But he went on and he got an AE role and, you know, and he's doing really good. And we celebrate that because he took, you know, he was a Spartan. He's always a Spartan. And he'll carry that with him. But, you know, we can celebrate, you know, that's another thing that keeps the culture, by the way, is that we also have a group of everybody that's ever been on the team. So when you're a Spartan and you come in, then, you know, and you leave, you're still part of that culture. Right. And it carries through. So when you're new and you come in and then you get introduced to that big culture, you can also see all the people that have been on the team before. They're in leadership roles, they're account executives, they're doing partnerships, they're doing, you know, different things in the organization, or in SaaS. And you can see that progression. It's inspiring, I would hope. I mean, that's part of the goal too. So we celebrate that, you know, we want to celebrate that, but sometimes you can't retain everybody, right? And people have to live their lives and make decisions for themselves. And sometimes, you know, you've run your clock out and it's just time to go. And we get that, right? Mm-hmm. I just want to hold on to them for a year and a half to 2 years. That's all I'm looking for, right? At the very, you know, somewhere in there. And I know that I've gotten a life. Now, also the big catch about taking somebody that's a blank slate is you've got to train them from the ground up, right? So you might have, ideally if you can onboard a BDR and get them on the phones in 2 weeks, that's amazing. You know, my people, it's 3 weeks of pretty heavy training, especially those that have never worked this role before or with the technology, right? You've got to teach them outreach and Salesforce and, there's tools they've never used before, but you got to have patience and you got to have the system built for that, right? And that's the key. If you don't have the system built for taking blank slates and developing them, regardless if they're 21 years old or 35 years old coming from another industry, it's not going to work anyways.
This was great, Jeremy. I think I'm going to go over this recording again. And I think there are a lot of pointers which I would want to imbibe in my own playbook in terms of hiring, building the culture. I think all of those are great points. My team is very lean right now, so I think it'll be helpful for me and everybody who's probably watching this or listening to this to, imbibe those old principles and, get the same success as you were able to. I think beside the 35-year-old age difference, I think everything else kind of makes sense. That makes sense too. It's just that, that probably might not be applicable in a lot of other cases.
Do you get people applying in India at that age? Like trying
not
to build
at all. Would be like 0.01% of people who might apply, but even they would know they're overqualified, and sometimes they're applying in desperation because they probably might have got let go from their job. At the same time, I'm okay with hiring those people, but at the same time, you understand there are certain confinements we all work in. For example, it could be the salary range, right? There's an average BDR salary, for example, in India would be way too low, while they might be on the upper end where we could even hire a VP sales for that matter, right? So that could be the biggest thing. I don't see a challenge because I've also worked with people when I was young, 2021, and I used to work with people. We used to work in the call center and we were taking these calls, and there was a person sitting next to me who was 55, right? So that's something, that's sort of a thing which I've seen even in India. Even I'm talking about like 12, 13 years ago. So you can imagine that sort of thing is totally okay. People are kind of very accepting that ways. Age isn't definitely not a barrier. It's just that I think the salary is what I believe could be the biggest barrier. As long as they're willing to do that, I think, why not?
It's, I was thinking like what industries could we pull people from that would make interesting? And I wrote an article about this on LinkedIn. I spent 20 years in the restaurant industry in the US. I started as a busser when I was 15 years old. I've waited table. I worked in every kind of restaurant possible, from a diner to five-star dining. And then I was a sommelier towards the end, and then, worked as a wine educator and distributor for the last couple of years before I moved out here. And I was just thinking servers, waiters, American waiters are such a great, it would be such a great resource, a pool to pull like BDRs from, because they are typically, what do we call it? Overly intelligent underachievers. This is the American server, right? Most of them have university degrees, but useless degrees, like myself, arts or literature or, philosophy. It's always that kind of person. And, and after waiting tables for like 15 years, so you start to look for stability, especially after the pandemic, stuff like that. They have children, and maybe if we offer them, a role as a BDR, you could also get longevity out of them too, because there's, their new career. And they're totally equipped to approach people cold, to sell, to pitch in a minute, that's waiting tables basically, right? To build rapport so quickly, in a matter of seconds. So they have that skill set. It's just a matter of, transferring it from the restaurant floor to the telephone.
No, I can totally agree with you. I think that's a good starting point. I think somebody recommended me the other day to hire people who have been into recruiting, because of course they're also doing the same thing.
Yeah, recruiters are really good too.
Yeah, so I think I'm gonna tap into that for sure. Yeah. And at the same time, I know how to capitalize that as well.
No, recruiters have they can build rapport really quickly, and they have prospecting skills.
Of course,
right? So it's it's another good resource for sure. I think we've hired some recruiters. We just hired a couple of lawyers here in Israel.
they're going to probably close, all the closures.
Huh? Well, it was interesting because we were talking about looking into strategic drivers of a company after reading the annual reports. And one of the guys there, he's like, I did that for years. Like, let me show you guys how to read these reports. And so he brought in a skill that none of us had.
Wow.
Right. And that was very, very cool. Also, when somebody's looking for legal advice, just hit the group chat.
That's amazing.
And then somebody will chime in.
All right, Jeremy. So we are approaching the last leg of the podcast. So I have like a small rapid fire for you. Is that okay?
Right. Of course.
Let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
Sales engagement automation systems are critical for any sales organization to achieve that excellence. But at the same time, it is a complex, tedious, and expensive process for any sales organization to implement it. Sometimes it can end in a failure too, and you have to start all over again. To fix this problem, Playbook.ai, our current sponsor, has introduced a program for SaaS and enterprise technology startups called the Sales Excellence Program. It is the most effective, fastest, and risk-free way to deploy a sales engagement automation system in your organization to drive that growth and drive revenue excellence. None of the top sales engagement platforms give you a free trial, at least most of them. But in the Sales Excellence Program, Playbook.ai customer success team not only gives you the free and unlimited access to all the features for 6 weeks, they also do the heavy lifting of implementing a sales engagement system and provide you with advice on what best practices you should follow when creating your sales playbook. To join the Sales Excellence Program, all you have to do is visit playbook.ai/SEP, Sales Engagement Platform, SEP, and type R, followed by my last name, WADHWA, when the request invitation form asks you for the name of the accelerator.
All right, I think I know the answers to a few of them, but I'm still going to ask you. All right. You have 5 seconds and you can pass if you don't want to answer. That's totally fine. All right.
All right.
Israel or US?
Israel.
Sales or marketing?
Oh, sales.
All right. Your idea of spending $1 million in a day and you cannot donate or give it to somebody?
Cars and art, wine.
Wow. Okay. Let's say you were omnipotent, okay? What is the first thing you would change in sales?
Attitude.
Mm-hmm. All right, awesome. That is not what I was expecting, to be honest.
Alrighty. What were you expecting from that one? I got to ask.
No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I did not have much expectation, but I was not expecting that attitude because I think that's something which a lot of people would say, hey, you know, that's kind of expected. But I know where you're coming from. All right. Any last advice for all the BDRs, all the people who are in sales development, you know, to improve their game?
Enjoy the role, right? Focus on the role. Like the next role is going to come soon enough, right? Enjoy the role that you're in. Enjoy the job. Work hard, right? Earn extra money, you know, get those accelerators. Like, and the job will come. Like the next role will be there. It will be there, but be patient. Right? And enjoy what you're doing now. And I think that's the most important thing.
That is awesome. Thank you so much, Jeremy, for coming with the show.
Appreciate your time.
Yeah.
My pleasure. thank you for having me.
Absolutely.